Hey, this is Nick Gelso, co-owner and founder of CLNS Radio. Today's podcast is brought to you by Lynda.com. Lynda.com is the home of expert video tutorials. Because you're such a loyal listener of CLNS Radio, and it's 2015, you want to kick the new year off in style, claim your free trial today from CLNS by going to Lynda.com/CLNS. That's LYNDA.com/CLNS. Now on to your regularly scheduled program.
Welcome to the Boston Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com.
Off the turnover, Rondo reverse, banks it in.
Fans, this is your destination for interactive Celtics coverage all season long.
Kelly still has time, takes it.
So what are you waiting for? We want to hear from you. Dial in at 347-215-7771.
Green out of the corner. Got another one.
Now let's get it started.
Welcome, everybody. This is the Boston Celtics post-game show powered by CLNS Radio, powered by Peak Organic Brewing, and also powered by Lynda.com. Your host, Cal Lee, on board with you guys. Another tough one at the TD Garden for Celtics fans to swallow. This one coming at the hands against the Milwaukee Bucks. They lose this one at home 110-101. Got a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, clearly the talk of the town is, can the Boston Celtics finish strong and position themselves to be a part of the Elite Eight teams in the Eastern Conference playing in the playoffs? And clearly tonight was a very important game, not just because of what lies ahead of them for the remainder of this regular season, but also when you look at the teams that they're playing against. This is one of those few teams that the Boston Celtics had an opportunity to capitalize and position themselves on a night when teams like the Indiana Pacers, teams like the Brooklyn Nets, and a bunch of the other guys that are still jockeying and fighting for position, this was a game that the Boston Celtics not only needed to win, but they had to have won in order to continue to keep themselves within relative distance to capture that eighth seed, maybe even the seventh seed. But, you know, they lost a tough one tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks team that, you know, at the outset of the year, we were never talking about the Milwaukee Bucks being a 500 or better team. We never even fathomed the idea that this team, even after the halfway point, after the big trade that they made to get Michael Carter Williams, would still be this significantly good. They have been through a very rough stretch of basketball in the second half of the season, but they have been actually playing back to the form that what got them to where they needed to be, and they put that on display against the Boston Celtics. You know, the reason why the Milwaukee Bucks are who they are is because they play defense. They were a top five defensive team in the NBA, and somehow they lost all of that, you know, after the second half of the season. I don't think it's because of the trade with Michael Carter Williams that did that, but I do think that somewhere along the lines, this team kind of forgot their way on what got them those wins at the beginning of the season and where they needed it the most. You know, this team was two games under 500. They suddenly got back to basics. They started playing defense. They started becoming that team that a lot of people talked about, and what made them so good defensively is they forced turnovers. And during a good stretch of the games that the Boston Celtics have won to get themselves in this position, it was because they limited their ability to turn the ball over. Well, tonight, they had over 20 turnovers in this game. And if you turn the ball over 20 times, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You're not giving yourself an opportunity to win those basketball games. And so clearly tonight was just one of those nights where the Celtics struggled to move the ball like they were doing before. They did it so lovely against the Indiana Pacers the other night. But tonight against a better defensive team, and more importantly, a team that is, you know, quite frankly, they are in the playoff picture. And you got to beat these teams if you want to consider yourself a legitimate team to be in that playoff picture. And the Celtics lose a tough one tonight, 110-101. Hopefully we'll have our my co-anchor on board, Calvin Chamberlain, to join on with us so he can get his thoughts of the game tonight. But, you know, this is one of those situations, again, where it's crunch time and every single win matters. We can forget about this rebuilding process that everyone keeps talking about in the time that it usually takes when we use that RB word. That RB word means, you know, this team, we don't know who they are. We don't know what they're capable of. And it would probably mean that 2-3 years down the road, we can really start talking about a successful basketball team on a night-in, night-out basis. That's not the case with this Boston Celtics team. This Boston Celtics team is a good basketball team. Let's accept it for what it is. Now, we don't have superstar players like Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, LeBron James, Kyrie Irving, or any of those guys. But that doesn't mean that we can't put together a collective group of guys who are going to put it all on the basketball court for 48 minutes. And that's what you're getting with this basketball team right now. 48 minutes, rock solid basketball, and these guys are going at it. And I think Brad Stevens has their ear. I think he has them understanding the gravity of the situation. It's a little unknown for these guys because most of these guys don't know what it's like to play in quote-unquote playoff atmosphere type basketball. And so this was the type of game that the Celtics needed in order to propel themselves in that conversation. They lose a tough one, you know, 110-101. You know, there's a lot of things that could be said about the fact that this team just didn't play well tonight, which they didn't. There were many aspects of this game that you could actually just start kind of scratching your head and say, really uncharacteristic for a hard-nosed, blue-collar type basketball team like this Celtics team has been all year. But give credit to the Boston Celtics, whereas even as bad as they looked, they still had opportunities to win this basketball game. And we've been saying this numerous amount of times with this team. This is what you're going to get when you have guys who don't know how to win. You got to understand that this Boston Celtics team doesn't have the veteran leadership of guys who have wins under their belt and who are responsible to help them attain those wins. There's no Rajon Rondo. There's no Jeff Green. There's only Brandon Bass to some level and degree. And so all of these guys are really learning what it's going to take in during crunched minutes when you got a game within 6 points or less to make the necessary plays to continue to ride that momentum, putting another team on their back, forcing them to take bad shots, forcing them to cause turnovers. This Celtics team doesn't truly understand that just yet. And so it's going to take some time. But I'd rather them take time in doing this now while they're relevant in the playoff picture than to do this when this doesn't have any kind of relevancy. What say you? Give us a call, 347-215-7771. Hopefully later on tonight we'll have Jared Weiss on board to give us our take about the feeling in the locker room, which I would predict, you know, there's some guys in there that are really disappointed that they did not come away with a victory. This Milwaukee Bucks team is a good basketball team, but they're not a great basketball team. And the Boston Celtics shouldn't have feared this Milwaukee Bucks team just simply because they're a sixth seed in the playoff picture. This team has not played good basketball. And so when you look up and down at the schedule for the Boston Celtics on the amount of games that were remaining for them in order for them to give themselves an opportunity to possibly be that eighth seed in the playoff picture, this was one of the games that they needed to win. A home game against a mediocre Milwaukee Bucks team. You got to win those games. You got to take those games. And this was just one of those games that was competitive in the beginning, really good basketball, very hard-nosed fought. And I applaud the Boston Celtics to a level that they played really good defense. I mean, this Milwaukee Bucks team, while they're not impressive offensively, they can shoot the three ball. And one of the things that the Celtics struggle more than anything is they cannot shoot, they cannot defend the three consistently. You'll have nights where off the ball, off of ball movement, they just struggle. Their front court guys don't close out well enough. Back court guys allow too much depth. Not good on rotations. Tonight, in the first half, the Boston Celtics were very good on the rotations, with the exception of O.J. Mayo. And how many times do we mention the name O.J. without attaching it to something bad? Well, tonight, it was bad for the Boston Celtics because O.J. Mayo basically tore up the Celtics defense in the first half. And not even for O.J. Mayo, the Celtics team probably would have been beating the Milwaukee Bucks and would have been had a sizable advantage. But they couldn't figure out that dude. The guy had 20 points in the first half of the game. you know, against the Boston Celtics defense. And that's just one. That's just a byproduct of Jason Kidd figuring out where his mismatches were. And that is also a byproduct of Brad Stevens not responding quickly enough in realizing the hot hand in O.J. Mayo. Now, I saw some wrinkles that they were throwing out there to try and stop O.J. Mayo, but I don't think that they nearly applied enough ball pressure on the guard, Michael Carter-Williams, or on O.J. Mayo in order to allow him to shoot tougher shots. And so because of that, O.J. Mayo had a solid first half. The Celtics figured him out, though, in the second half. He wasn't nearly as treacherous as he was in the first. But ultimately, this just came down to who was hitting their shots and how easy were the shots coming. For the Milwaukee Bucks, it really couldn't have come any easier, because if it wasn't O.J. Mayo torturing them, Zaza Pachulia, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Chris Middleton, Ersan Ilyasova, all of those guys were getting easy looks in the paint. I cannot tell you how frustrating it is when you are a basketball team and you're just watching guys 3, 5, 6 feet from the basket, just layup drills, no contested shots, nobody's being put on them. It's just really tough. Celtics allowed 62 points in the paint tonight against the Milwaukee Bucks. This is a Milwaukee Bucks team. While they got one formidable size center in John Henson, basically, at best. Zaza Pachulia, he's got body, but he does not nearly have any of the athleticism that defines a true center in the game. He's more of like a power forward playing center. And so there's just no excuse for the Celtics to allow a layup drill with that cast of guys that the Milwaukee Bucks have on their front court. And you expect yourself to possibly pull out a victory. Just wasn't going to happen. So, you know, a lot of things did not go to Celtics' way tonight. Definitely something that we have to keep our eye on. They come off of a really good game defeating the Indiana Pacers by 13 the other night. And then tonight, you know, just a not great performance, you know, by this team. Not just from an offensive perspective, but I think during the second half of the game, you know, defensively, they just did not look crisp. And in order for you to solidify an opportunity for you to still be in this playoff picture, you've got to play the full 48. Same kind of effort that they did in the first half defensively. I wish they did it in the second half, but ultimately they could not do it long enough, and the Milwaukee Bucks was able to pull ahead with this victory. I'm going to go over probably a few statistics that clearly, you know, were the outcome, or in many ways would have determined the outcome. And then, you know, clearly I want to get your guys' thoughts about, you know, certain guys on this team that truly had an impact. So be sure to give us a call here, 347-215-7771. The lines are open. We'd definitely love to hear from you, get your thoughts and reactions with regards to tonight's tough loss. Boston Celtics lose 110-101. This is CLNS Radio's post-game show, the Boston Celtics. Be sure to go to lynda.com, check out lynda.com, free 10-day trial membership. When you subscribe, you will be opening up a world of knowledge that you probably would have never thought was imaginable. If you go to lynda.com, there's hundreds of different tutorials available for you. Learn something new. And if not, tell a friend to learn something new, but pass on that knowledge every day. So go to www.lynda.com. Tonight was a pretty interesting night. We saw some really good things happen. And then there's something that I thought was really, really, really interesting with regards to this Boston Celtics team. And I can't wait when Jared has an opportunity to touch bases with us here tonight, because clearly what we want is to get his take on the return of Jared Sullinger. You know, if we're going to take anything away from really the sour taste of our mouths of losing a game like this to the Milwaukee Bucks, it's probably the fact that we got back, you know, one of our better players on this team in Jared Sullinger. Who was earlier predicted to not even be back the rest of the season, you know, due to back injury. But somehow, some way, through the miracles of modern medicine, Jared Sullinger returned tonight. He played some limited minutes. But I got to ask you, the audience, and anyone out there who understands and has seen this Boston Celtics team play once Jared Sullinger has gone down. Do you buy into the idea that this was a good idea by Brad Stevens to bring back Jared Sullinger at this particular game, at this particular juncture, while the Boston Celtics are fighting for an opportunity to get into the playoffs? I want to get your thoughts on that. 347-215-7771. Here's my personal feelings about this. And under no circumstances am I dissing or dogging Jared Sullinger, because I believe that Jared Sullinger, when healthy, is a big, big part of this Boston Celtics team and their offensive efficiency, and a big, big part on this team getting better from a front court perspective. But he's been gone for a good portion of this season, so to speak. And Brad Stevens has had to figure out a way to use his roster to maximize the amount of effort and wins that this team has accumulated thus far. And I got to give it to Brad Stevens. Did an excellent job. Now, I understand, you know, he has a belief in Jared Sullinger to help this basketball team. And like any player who comes off of injury, I get it. I want you to come back and I want you to help contribute for this team. But with really no formidable practice, nothing that we can really hang our hat on, nothing that we can truly and say, you know, indicatively that Jared Sullinger is back and he's going to be able to contribute for this team, I just thought it was a bad idea that he came out there on this basketball court. Now, I'm not saying that this is Jared Sullinger's fault. I'm more so putting this, and the accountability really should be on Brad Stevens and Stevens' decision to say that we're going to bring him back and put him on the court. I just felt like these games right now for the Boston Celtics are too important to just throw guys in there. Jared Sullinger, I get it. He's back. Celtics fans are happy. We're elated. We got another body, another guy to, you know, put in there in that front court. But a back injury is not something that you just throw somebody on the basketball court at with about seven games remaining in the season. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I can understand if you did this 2 weeks ago. I can understand if you did this a month ago. But we are down to the final week and a half of basketball, and these games matter. It's not throwing Jared Sullinger out there to get a feel of what he's going to be like for you come next year. It's not throwing Jared Sullinger out there so, you know, we can give him some warm-up games because the Celtics team are in the lottery and, you know, they're just playing out to, you know, to just see what's going on. These are relevant basketball games. These are games that are determining whether or not the Celtics are in as one of the last, as one of the first eight. And so you throw a guy into this rotation who Brad Stevens has done a marvelous job with the way that he's brought in Jarekbo, the way that he's brought in Datome, the way that he's gotten efforts from Gerald Wallace at times. Phil Pressey even tonight came in and sparked something that the Celtics were lacking from their backcourt play with Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, and Avery Bradley. And then to just basically throw a guy like it, you know, Jared Sullinger in there into the lion's den, so to speak, and then getting expectations that he's going to do something for this team, you know, either it's an act of desperation or it's an act of foolishness, because I just don't see where he would have contributed to help this Celtics team when you've got a roster already, you know, doing a great job for you, already coming in and doing the job for you. You don't need that being muddled up because you're trying to force a guy back in there who hasn't seen action or hasn't seen significant play when these games matter the most. You may disagree with my perspective on it, and I can certainly understand that, and I can respect that. But am I really far off in thinking that way? I just think that Brad Stevens had a solid rotation, to work with right now down this stretch of games. And even up to the other night when the Celtics won by 13 against the Indiana Pacers, there was no mention about Jared Sullinger possibly coming back or Jared Sullinger's presence being felt to come help the Boston Celtics. So why now, of all of the games that you're choosing to do it, you're doing it? Yeah, I get it. It was a home game. But again, it's basically a playoff game. Every single game that the Boston Celtics are playing right now is a playoff game. Every single one of them. It's not, you know, if you lose this game, oh, you know, the next game they'll get it again. Every single game, if that the Celtics don't win, they then have to be more dependent on other teams to help them out. They have to be dependent on the Charlotte Hornets and dependent on the Indiana Pacers and dependent on other teams that are ahead of them to root for to beat them. If you're the Boston Celtics, you want to control your own destiny. And when you look at the schedule remaining for them, they are not going to have an easy task of them to win out these games that are necessary for them to get that eighth spot. So anything, any adjustment or any change that has to be made at this particular, this particular juncture has to be with the mindset that it is for the Celtics' best opportunity, best chance to win basketball games. Want to definitely get you here, get your take on this. You know, please, by all means, give us a call here. 347-215-7771. I'm believing that my co-anchor, my co-host is jumping on board with me to talk some basketball. What's going on?
Oh, Cal, what's up, man? I didn't realize you were going to bring me on. I'm texting Calvin for you right now to tell him to call because we thought with all the confusion that the show was going to start at 10:30. So we'll be up and running. Pretty shortly.
All right. Sounds good, my man. Sounds good.
Sorry to leave you hanging again, boss. But, hey, listen, can you tell me why Avery Bradley got torched so bad tonight? As far as I could tell from the upper deck there, the Bucks guards, O.J. Mayo in particular, were just taking him to the woodshed.
You know what I found interesting tonight was, you know, Avery Bradley gets that Red Auerbach Award. Everybody is heartwarmed, heartfelt. Avery Bradley almost didn't know what to do with the trophy when it was presented to him. And somewhere along that lines of all of that joy and that happiness, you know, there were just certain points where the Celtics, you know, backcourt just completely forgot that, hey, the Milwaukee Bucks actually have some decent guards that you got to guard up against. And, you know,
I just wanted to say real quickly again that I just couldn't believe it. Like, it was 52-50 at halftime, and then you turn around and midway through the third quarter, the Celtics are down 15. It seemed like it happened just out of nowhere, but I thought that it started with the Bucks backcourt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the one thing that I thought that the Boston Celtics had going for them more than anything was the fact that they had ball movement, and you just saw them basically get done in. With the one thing that has made them so good over these recent stretch of games, ball movement. Somehow they just could not figure out the ball movement of the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, I saw like many, many, many instances where the Celtics would try to be aggressive defensively, but the Bucks had them spaced out so lovely. And, of course, by the time that the dribble penetration happens, you know, they lose their man, and their man happens to be a Jared Dudley. Their man has to be a Chris Middleton, and these guys shoot 40% plus from three. You just can't leave guys like that open. One of the reasons why O.J. Mayo got off so early in that first half of the game was because of the fact that they just were not looking completely across all parts of the court to see where their man was drifting off at, distancing themselves at. The closeouts just were not crisp at all. And, you know, listen, even though the game was somewhat close in the first half, the Celtics just had to do a better job defensively if they had any expectations that they were going to win this basketball game tonight.
All right, man, I'm with you. And I think you're going to have Jared in about 10 minutes because he just he texted me to say that he'll be ready at that point. So he'll be giving you a call. You guys will be good to go. And Calvin should be coming right up as well.
All right. Is Calvin calling from an 818 number?
818, that's him.
Calvin, yeah, what's going on, my man?
There he is. All right, gentlemen. Yeah. Have a good show.
What's going on, my friend?
What's going on? So, pretty fun game tonight. I mean, not the outcome Celtics fans would want. But, yeah, I thought it was a pretty well-played game overall. I mean, I do have some issues What you think of the game?
Well, my thoughts of the game was, again, you know, another hard-fought game by the Boston Celtics. But clearly this is a game where it just shows that this team, they still have a very, very big learning curve in understanding how to win basketball games. And that's just something that Brad Stevens is going to fix. Now, whether this is, you know, this is going to kill the Boston Celtics opportunity, you know, they can look back at this game, and if they don't make it into the playoffs, you know, this could be one of those games as to why, you know, when I watched this Milwaukee Bucks team, there was nothing that was so overly impressive, you know, that made me think to myself that, oh my gosh, you know, this Celtics team was completely outmatched. It, you know, they were capable of winning this basketball game. But when you turn the ball over 20 times tonight, again, another bad performance shooting the rock from three, you know, ball movement, a lot of ISO, very little ball movement from the Boston. I mean, this was a game where the Boston Celtics pretty much shot themselves in the foot and really just kind of laid out the red carpet for the Milwaukee Bucks to kind of have their way with them, especially when they went on that 13-0 run on them and ran up the, you know, to a double digit lead. You know, a lot of it was just lackadaisical, you know, defensive rotations, just allowing the front court players to just do a layup drill, like I was mentioning earlier on the show already. You know, just again, these are just things that if you're the Boston Celtics, you cannot afford to do against a decent basketball team in the Milwaukee Bucks, because they will take advantage of those opportunities.
Well, I thought the size of the Bucks really bothered the Celtics tonight, particularly Isaiah Thomas. So we'll get into that a little bit more as we go. But I really thought, you're right, they had that stretch at the start of the third quarter where they played well. Ilya Sova kind of went off early on in that third quarter. They got a lot of fast break opportunities, which allowed they you know, started turning over the Celtics finally. They got fast break opportunities. You know how many offensive rebounds the Celtics got in that third quarter? Zero. So they couldn't get anything at the rim. They couldn't get to them. Avery Bradley, you know, he had a good start in the first quarter, but sort of disappeared in that third quarter when they needed him offensively. And they had Isaiah Thomas trying to run the offense out there, but I thought he was really bothered by Michael Carter-Williams. And it's a shame looking at Michael Carter-Williams, because, you know, he was he's so good defensively. Like, he was just eating Isaiah Thomas alive, I thought, when he was out there in the game. Isaiah had a lot of success against Bayless, but then you look at him on the other end, and he's just throwing alley-oops to nowhere and throwing the ball right out of bounds, and he can't shoot. He's such a fascinating player to me, but... Yeah, so I really thought that was a big factor. Isaiah was trying to push it against him. He got a few turnovers in that third quarter. I didn't like the decision to bring Jared Sullinger in during that stretch when they were playing poorly. He didn't seem to know what he was doing out there on the floor. He tried to double team. He rotated slowly, and the Bucks got a lot of easy layups behind that. Chris Middleton, who was, you know, ice cold in the first half, started lighting it up in that third quarter, and like you said, off a lot of dribble penetration, he got some open shots, but then he also buried shots right in Avery Bradley's face, who, you know, as much credit as Bradley gets for being a dominant defensive player, I wasn't impressed with his defense at all tonight. I'm sorry, I don't mean to monopolize the conversation, but...
No, by all means, man. I mean, listen, man, I was hoping to be able to get this kind of conversation a little bit earlier before, but I know there was some, you know, some mixed communications as far as getting everybody on. You know, you brought up a really great point, because my question that I want to say that I brought in as the main topic of conversation tonight, you know, regardless of, you know, besides the fact that the Celtics lost this game to the Milwaukee Bucks, I felt in my personal opinion, that I just thought it was a mistake for Jared Sullinger to be playing in this game. And I just think it's a mistake that the Celtics, or more importantly, Brad Stevens, is going to try and force Jared Sullinger into the lineup at this particular juncture with this many games remaining. And the only reason why I say that is because Brad Stevens has done an awesome job with the roster that he has had to work with. And once Jared Sullinger went down with this season-ending injury, he basically has put it on the rest of these guys to step up and to do what is necessary to even put the Celtics in this position. Now, I can understand if we had maybe a month left of basketball left to play. I can understand maybe if we had 15, 20 games left. But there is only 7 games left in the season. And to throw Jared Sullinger in here, who's been gone for most of the second half of the season, when you are now positioning yourselves to get into the playoffs, coming off of a back injury, to me, I just think that it's just too much too soon. And it almost makes it, like I said, it's either going to be an act of desperation or an act of foolishness. Because I think now you are going to compromise what you've been getting from your bench players who've been contributing to get you to this point so far. And I just wanted to get what your thoughts were with regards to Jared Sullinger now being inserted, and the intent might be to actually have him in there now through the rest of the stretch of these games.
Well, the back injury was his rookie season. This was actually a foot injury, which, you know, obviously when we see what's going on with Kevin Durant, you always want to be careful with how early you bring guys back. And if you look at his projection, certainly I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to speculate too much. I mean, he was cleared, and so as far as you would have to say the same thing for Brad Stevens, because you know he was cleared, he doesn't want to play, and if Stevens wants to win, he needs a guy like Jared Sullinger to play. So if the doctors say he can play, I guess that's okay, even though I would still be concerned about it. I think, you know, the fact that he played 3 minutes showed that he was probably concerned about it. I didn't have a problem with him playing so much as the fact that you brought him in there near the start of the third quarter when Milwaukee had, you know, gone on a little mini run. You're putting him in a high-pressure situation where the game can be blown wide open at that point. The starters were all in for Milwaukee. I just don't understand, if you're going to bring him in for a few minutes, why don't you bring him in, you know, at the start of the second quarter when he's playing up against second-teamers, you can rest him for a couple minutes and it's not that big of a deal. I just didn't like the timing of he didn't play at all in the first half and then you're just going to randomly bring him in the third quarter. It doesn't make sense to me.
No, I agree with you from that perspective. I just, maybe to me, in my mindset, with the way I'm looking at how this Boston Celtics team has been with regards to the ability to score, who their playmakers are, I just feel like guys are really secured in their roles and what they can do and what they should be expected to do. And a player like Jared Sullinger, listen, that we could put the argument in there that he was their best player on that basketball court, you know, prior to the injury and before Isaiah Thomas wound up on this basketball team. And so now I just think that there's going to be an even bigger dichotomy that has to be looked at, whereas how do you get the ball to this guy, Jared Sullinger, who clearly can be a better, you know, be one of the, you know, the second best player on this basketball team, injury aside. But the expectation for him is that he's going to want the basketball. And I just don't know if now is the time to be doing that with only a handful of games to go. And each one of these games are equally as important as the next one, because we're talking about this Celtics team trying to get into the playoffs.
Well, I think another factor for the Celtics also that maybe you're not considering is the fact that, Sullinger has a huge weight issue, and when he doesn't play, that's when he tends to put on weight. So I know he's been on a diet, they have him on a paleo diet, and he's trying to lose weight, but maybe simply the fact that trying to get him in games and trying to get him those minutes, they're hoping that factors into keeping his weight down.
Well, listen, if we're talking about the future of Jared Sullinger at the expense of possibly the Celtics losing key players, getting opportunity minutes to help contribute for this team to win those games, I mean, to me, that's a tough thing. That's a tough pill for me to swallow, because I clearly don't want to have, you know, set that kind of expectation or the ideas, because like I was saying earlier before, it's not that I have a problem with Jared Sullinger. I just have a problem with the timing of trying to do this and what the intent in doing this could possibly mean and what it could possibly do in impacting the Celtics' ability to win these games. When you look at and let me ask you this question, Cal, when you look at the Boston Celtics now and you look at the rest of these teams with the games that are remaining left, how realistic are the chances for the Boston Celtics to possibly pull this out and make it as the eighth seed in this playoff picture?
Well, unfortunately, it's difficult because Brooklyn did win tonight, so I believe there's a two-game gap. I'm looking as we speak. I'm not hyper-concerned with Brooklyn in terms of certainly they could fall back off the map, but I think that they've won five or six in a row. They're, in fact, now the seven after tonight's win. They've won six in a row. So they're at 40 losses. The Heat are at 41. The Celtics are only a game behind the Heat at 42. But I guess I wouldn't bet on the Celtics to overcome the Miami Heat. The Heat are a bit of a wild card because of their injury situation, but so I guess with that in mind, they could easily overcome that one game difference. Two games with the Nets. How many games is that to play? What is that, 72 for the Celtics right now?
I'm sorry,
76.
76, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so that's six games left for them, 75 for Brooklyn, so seven for them, and seven for Miami as well. I don't think that's insurmountable. I'd have to look at the schedules. I would be curious to do that. In fact, maybe I'll do that right now. But I don't think it's insurmountable, but certainly with the way they've been playing lately, I haven't been particularly impressed with them. But you could say, you could make the argument if in defense of Jared Sullinger, seven games isn't three games, right? So certainly by playing Sullinger significant minutes in this seven-game stretch, they could potentially fall out of a spot they might otherwise have. But the counter argument is like if you play Jared Sullinger, the Celtics are a team that desperately needs size, desperately needs rebounding. If you're playing Atlanta without Jared Sullinger, maybe your chances go from 15% to 5%. So it's like where do you go there? In seven games, Sullinger should be able to get back into form. Or you've seen enough of him to where you realize you're not going to play him at all in the postseason. I think the idea of trying to secure that playoff spot and then trying to work Jared Sullinger in the rotation, for a playoff series is obviously the worst of all worlds, right? You can agree with that.
So yeah, definitely. Not to cut you off, Calvin, I think Jared is on with us. Hey, is that Jared?
What's up?
Hey, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, we got some good stuff from Jonas Jerebko after the game, not shockingly. But that was a bit of a tough game to watch, frankly, in the fourth quarter. That was some offensive malpractice, I would say, by both teams there.
Yeah, man. Listen, the question of the night could have been, well, what was your malfunction? So definitely something that Celtics fans weren't expecting to see after really a great first half of basketball. Really tough-nosed, tough-minded. They were very, very aggressive. I didn't want to get into the whole play, the refereeing because, my goodness, it was really, really bad. There's no question about it.
Too bad. We're going to get into it, so it doesn't matter what you want.
It doesn't matter what we want to do here. But the first thing I want to ask you, and it was really the main question of tonight, Jared, was, tonight we saw Jared Sullinger back in action, and my apologies. Guys, because I said it was a back issue. It was actually a foot issue that, was predicted he was supposed to be out for the rest of the season. But were you surprised, Jared, at the fact that that they did decide to play Jared Sullinger tonight, given the height and levity of this situation, that these games remaining now are essentially playoff games?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of the main reason, is they felt that he was ready to go, and they were able to get him in a very crucial game. I mean, they're trying to chase Milwaukee. They're trying to chase Brooklyn and Miami as well. Now, obviously, you look at that metatarsal fracture, you compare it to the Jones fracture that Kevin Durant had, in which they rushed Kevin Durant back. We don't really know if they rushed him back too soon, quote-unquote. But clearly, he came back, wasn't 100%, and then re-injured his foot. So, you have to – I mean, what have we known over the years? Bottom line, for foot injuries in the NBA – if whatever you think they're going to be out, just double it. Because if you mess up a guy's foot, his career is ruined. And we've seen so many big men over the years have their careers completely ruined by foot injuries. Now, I'm not going to compare Jared Sullinger to Bill Walton yet. So I don't think it's quite reached that peak. But you look at Bill Walton, the guy that was a phenomenal player, had a foot injury, tried to play after recovering from that foot injury, and it basically ruined his career. Now, Zydrunas Ilgauskas is the only guy I can ever think of that had a foot injury and actually came back and became a good player after that. But with Sullinger, if they feel that he's ready to go, that's the medical staff's call. I don't really have any insight to it. The GM and the coach both said that he was good to go. Sullinger said that he was good to go, that he felt good, just a little late on things, but felt good overall. But he did say that was kind of surprising was that his wind was actually great, actually. He even admitted that he was surprised by the fact that he actually had decent conditioning. He claims he lost 20 pounds. I think maybe he lost the invisible weight before the water weight, because it didn't really look like he lost 20 pounds. But I got to say, up close, he definitely has looked a little bit slimmer and more nimble walking around.
Jared, my question about that was, and maybe you have some insight into this, is I like the fact that they're bringing back Sullinger, assuming that he's medically cleared. But my question more is why did Brad Stevens wait till early on in the third quarter when Milwaukee had their starters out there? He didn't play them at all in the first half. It just seems like a weird time to try to insert him into the offense, and I think it kind of worked out disastrously for them.
I mean, I wouldn't really say that their offense has been humming along smoothly without him. It was very – right after the Isaiah Thomas trade, things went really well. Even when Thomas went down, things are going well. But lately, they've been looking like they could use Jared Sullinger. And Steven said that he put him in tonight because they were really playing poorly around the rim. They were missing layups. They weren't able to get chances at the rim. Jared Sullinger is their best offensive low-post player, so he obviously makes sense for that. They tried to get him out there, and he was a bit of a mess. I mean, he almost airballed a three. He committed two fouls. He looked a step behind everybody, so he only got to play 4 minutes. If they can get him in there, that's great. He can play the role that a lot of these guys are playing. He works as a stretch four. It's not that he's a good three-point shooter, but he can play that role at the very least. And he definitely makes up for his maybe his lack of three-point shooting, or at least inconsistent three-point shooting, with, I'd say, better fourth-quarter three-point shooting and being an absolute menace on the offensive glass. And that's something that their other deep-shooting stretch fours can't bring to the table.
Gardner Report correspondent and my man Jared Weiss giving to us here from the locker room down at the TD Garden. Boston Celtics lose a tough one to the Bucks, 110 to 101. Jared, one of the things that I think was pretty interesting, and Calvin brought this up, was just really how bad the Celtics were in that third quarter. There was it basically was, I think, what, like the three-minute mark before they were able to grab a rebound. And from what your eyes had seen, what was going on with the Boston Celtics that they were just so bad from that perspective? What was it that you were seeing?
Well, the big thing was, so basically they went with a kind of a defensive lineup, a big lineup in the third quarter, and they were just garbage offensively. It was basically like an 8-point lead for most of that third quarter there. And I think it was it the fourth quarter, early in the fourth quarter when they went on that run there. So the lead really ballooned. Looking at the wrong thing here. The lead really ballooned in the late third quarter. It wasn't until I believe they brought Isaiah Thomas in later in the third quarter they brought Jarebko in. And that's when things really opened up for them, because Jarebko was stretching the floor. That was giving Isaiah Thomas more room to work with. And Isaiah started kind of pushing the break, pushing it towards the rim in the half court. And that was opening up shots for Jarebko as well. So I think Thomas had 8 points in the third quarter, most of them pretty much coming at the end there. And I like that lineup that they go with there, where they go with a bunch of shooting bigs and give Isaiah Thomas room to work. That lineup seems to work for them really well, but usually defensively it's a major issue. And they went with the 2-3 zone. I asked Stevens about that, which they always go with the zone very often. Stevens said that the zone is really intended to be more of a changeup than a fastball or a curveball for them. It's kind of just a way to kind of mess with the offensive flow, because, you know, Milwaukee, they were getting to the rim really easily, and they wanted to just kind of prevent dribble penetration. And he did that, and it was working until Michael Carter-Williams hit a big shot. Giannis hit a big shot. Those are two guys that aren't really good shooters. And that's when Stevens kind of had to reconsider at that point.
Jared, Bucks seemed really aggressive about posting up whoever they were hiding Isaiah Thomas on whenever he was out there on the floor. I think that was, you know, part of the reason why they had to switch to that zone to protect him defensively. How concerned should the Celtics be, you know, if they manage to get in a playoff series, about, you know, leaving Isaiah out there on the floor defensively, particularly if a team, you know, has guards that can post up?
I saw that too. MCW was backing. They were basically clearing out space for MCW. They were putting all the shooters on the weak side and one in the strong side corner. They would have MCW just go to work on Isaiah. He would back down Isaiah Thomas to the dotted circle. And then the reason why MCW is MCW and not like Dwayne Wade, for instance, is that instead of making a great play off of it, MCW would just basically turn, jump in midair, and hope to find a shot or a pass. And he kept screwing up every single time. It was amazing that, for some reason, MCW just couldn't convert after backing Thomas all the way down. And Thomas is like, what, 5'9 on a good day. MCW is about 6'3, maybe even 6'4. So the size advantage was huge. You saw that when Thomas got matched up later in the fourth quarter on Chris Middleton on a few switches, Middleton was just shooting over him as if nobody was there. And Middleton had some huge shots that really kind of kept the game open for Milwaukee, and I would say probably won them the game. So I don't know what the Celtics do to hide Isaiah Thomas. This has always been the weakness with Thomas. I think tonight it was probably more glaring than ever. I don't think I can really remember a game where I saw so many guys just shoot over, move Thomas with such ease. A going zone is a great way to hide it, but you can't go zone in the playoffs. It very rarely works. I remember Phoenix was doing it a few years ago, and I worked with them, but they had so many super athletic defenders, and they were obviously one of the best fast-breaking team in NBA, in the NBA since the Showtime Lakers. So the Celtics, I mean, the Celtics are kind of, I guess, like a poor man's version of that Suns team, but that's a very, very poor man at that, at best. So they could try to hide it with a 2-3 zone, not a 3-2 zone, probably. I would like to see them try to do that. That would be a good idea. But that's one of their biggest quandaries, one of their biggest conundrums, and that's why, you know, they're a team trying to fight for an 8 seed and they're not a 6 seed.
Jared, you know, one of the things that I saw tonight's game was really interesting to me was how difficult the Celtics were trying to move that basketball between the second and the third quarter. It seems like the Milwaukee Bucks had their number trapping Thomas, trapping whoever it was that was dribbling that basketball and really forcing the Celtics to make haste decisions and jack up just bad shots because they left very little time and very little opportunity for them to get a good look at shooting the basketball. What did it look like from your perspective, you know, seeing what was happening there? Because that was a little uncharacteristic that the Celtics were not trying to figure out a way to move that basketball a little bit faster than allowing the Bucks to trap them all the time.
Well, there were a lot of possessions in the second and third quarter where the Celtics were kind of running their system, their kind of like template-based system, but they were running it without any effectiveness. Their system is basically guys hits a pick, retreats to the corner, flares out, catches the pass kind of curling around, drives towards the middle, and tries to find someone to pass to on the perimeter. They would have all these possessions where guys would keep catching on the elbow, keep driving towards the middle, and then passing out of it. And it was amazing. It was like watching like a watercolor painting being made where it's just like swipe back and forth, swipe back and forth. And eventually the shot clock would get to like 5 and nobody had shot the ball yet. And that's the biggest issue for them is they have all these guys that can catch the ball, shoot the ball, or move the ball, but they didn't have anybody out there to close. And it wasn't until they got Isaiah Thomas out there that they finally got someone that can actually finish off the possession and make a play. But they went a while with that. Give credit to Chris Middleton, MCW, for their trapping play tonight. Jared Dudley, too. I mean, Middleton and MCW were trapping point guards crazy tonight. There was a few plays where Isaiah Thomas got stuck in the forest there between them, really even in the middle of the floor, which was really difficult to pull off. But Milwaukee played really good perimeter defense tonight, and the Celtics just hit a lot of big threes. I mean, they had 8 threes tonight, which isn't a ton, and they actually, all except for Avery Bradley, all of them came off the bench. So I would credit Milwaukee's starting lineup for doing a great job of stunting Boston's ball movement. And I would especially credit MCW for his point guard defense play tonight.
I thought Avery Bradley was hot tonight, Jared. But it seems like when Isaiah Thomas gets in the game, they sort of go away from those, you know, screens and curls that Avery Bradley makes his bread and butter on. Do you think that they should, you know, find a way to make them coexist in the offense when they're on the floor at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, with Avery, I feel like he and Isaiah could work pretty well if they're running some side pick and roll, and then Avery can kind of curl in from, like, the corner, get a corner screen. He can roll into that spot on the elbow that he loves so much and hit a shot from there. That would work out pretty nicely. I mean, you saw tonight he had, what was it, 9 points or 11 points in the first quarter? He really went off in the first quarter, and he didn't really do a ton after that. I mean, he ended up with 17, but I feel like he was mostly just, like, 3 points a quarter after that. You know, with Avery Bradley, his offensive nights are pretty inconsistent. He's been good lately, though. And I feel like offensively, he's kind of put the team on his back for the last couple of weeks, which has been great from him. But with him and Isaiah, it's harder for the rest of the team that if they're not spot-up shooters, it's hard for them to figure out how to play with Isaiah. It still looks with the way that the guys are playing with Isaiah Thomas right now. It's basically they get a screen and roll for him, and he either finds a shooter stationary on the perimeter or he makes a play. And as he's attacking the rim, you got the shooters out there, and then you got the guys from behind him kind of crashing in towards the glass. So he just kind of figures it out from there. Right, Avery is not really that spot-up guy as much as he's a guy. He's the kind of guy that likes to take a shot off a dribble or a pull-up or something like that. So he's, I feel like he's just the kind of player that doesn't really mesh well with the way that the kind of free-form way that they're running the offense with Isaiah.
Jared, a couple of questions before we let you run a body here and stuff. You know, tough loss for the Boston Celtics. You know, when you look at what they have remaining left on their schedule, six games left. I mean, how big of a blow is it for them to lose this game at home to the Milwaukee Bucks, which, you know, I'm sure myself and Calvin, we had thought was, you know, this is a game that the Celtics could have won and they really should have won, and they just didn't look like they wanted it bad enough against a team that really has been struggling the second half of the season, the Milwaukee Bucks.
Well, I think Milwaukee played really good defense tonight. They were incredibly efficient. They shot 53% tonight. You look at the box score. There was, let's see, seven players in double figures, and then MCW had 8 points, and Jared Bayless had 6 points. So almost every player that played in this game for Milwaukee had double digits, which I've never seen in my entire life, but I'm sure it's happened in recent NBA history. Milwaukee is one of those teams that they just, like, tonight there was no single great player for them. I mean, I know OJ had 22 points, or 24 points. Almost all that came in that huge second quarter he had. These guys, you take one of them out of the game, and two more pop up. It's like playing whack-a-mole. It's amazing. They don't have anyone that's really great. They don't have anyone that can take over the game, but they got a bunch of solid players that do a couple things well. And they're able, when one guy isn't doing well, they got two guys that'll do something well. And ended with MCW, who I thought was pretty mediocre offensively throughout the game, and Chris Middleton, who hadn't really done much in the game before that, had missed a ton of shots. In the fourth quarter, they were almost unstoppable, and they were the ones that really put the finishing touches on this game. So Milwaukee's a solid team. They're a fighting team. They're really just kind of a better version of the Celtics right now. They're these two overachieving teams that they have one thing that they do well. The Celtics do high pace and spread offense pretty well. Milwaukee does, I'd say, maybe a slower pace, but they can shoot the ball pretty well, and they've got really tough and versatile defenders. But they fight really hard and they overachieve. And there's going to be some nights when you're an overachiever where the other team is overachieving you. And that's what happened tonight.
Calvin, any last questions?
Well, you started the conversation by saying you got some good stuff from Drebko. You wanna give us some insight into that?
Let's wrap that one up there. So Drebko, as you guys all saw, there was a string of plays where the Celtics fans are really raining boos on the refs. The biggest one was Drebko got swiped in the head by MCW on a fast break. It was a really, really crucial one, and the refs swallowed their whistles on it. From my angle, which was a bad angle, I couldn't really tell if that was a bad call. I saw the replay, and Drebko just got smacked in the head and then the wrist, and they couldn't believe the ref missed that call. So the ref had a pretty good look at it. But Drebko said, "We all make mistakes. No comment," when asked about that play. I'm trying to find the other quote that he said. But he said that the play wasn't that big of a deal, which I guess is fair because, I mean, like, come on. They had been battling all game. You can't put it all on one play. But I love that Drebko he led off his press conference saying, "We all make mistakes." So that's a very good and vague way to avoid getting fined $15,000 for criticizing the refs.
That's awesome stuff, man. Jared, as far as the feel and the tone of, you know, what was going on in the locker room, was there a lot of disappointment or, you know, those guys still trying to keep their head high because they still know that they're still in the playoff chase?
Well, Jonas himself said this was a really tough loss. He said that even though it's not the hardest loss they've had, it's the latest, so it sucks. So, I mean, Jonas is a pretty honest guy. I think that the players they realized that this was one that they had to have. I mean, they all are at this point, but especially against a team that you're trying to pull them back closer towards doing the playoff race. Now, there's still one night. When one night, them being ninth, they can go to seventh really quickly. It's not like they're like out of reach now. But beating Milwaukee was really crucial. And it's different than losing to Cleveland, for instance. I mean, this one is a game where it's not only is the win crucial to you, but you get yourself closer to one of the seeding opportunities. So they all realize that. They all know that especially with Solinger back, it's like they got to get let's be honest, they got to get their S word together if they want to be able to get in the playoffs. Because Brooklyn, as we saw tonight, beating Toronto after beating New York the other night, the Knicks win, not surprising, even though they barely got that win. Beating Toronto, that is crucial, and it's pretty clear that the Nets aren't just going to go away, especially with Brook Lopez starting to look like Brook Lopez again, and Darren Williams even looking pretty good again. So they can't drop any games because they need to get past Brooklyn, and Miami's playing well too. So they're on the outside looking in all the way through the final game of the season against Toronto.
Don't the Celtics have
Toronto? They have two Toronto games. They're going to Toronto right now. They'll play there tomorrow. And then they have the season finale in Boston against Toronto. They got two against Cleveland, and then I can't remember what the other ones are, but they do have a chance to try to climb the standings.
I'm looking at it again. Yeah, it's Detroit and Milwaukee again, but I guess my question to you is the way Toronto's playing, maybe they're looking to roll over for any of these playoffs or potential playoffs.
It's possible. I mean, it definitely is.
All right, Jared.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, Jared. Thanks for giving us a call. All right, there you have it, Calvin. So, I mean, from the looks of things here, I mean, definitely a tough loss. The Celtics have to pick it up because they turn around tomorrow and they head up to Air Canada. Take on the Toronto Raptors, a team that's been kind of up and down. They look good at times. They look bad at times. Don't know what to expect from this team, but I'm more concerned about the fact that the Celtics, you know, lost this kind of game and then have to turn around 24 hours later, or not even 24 hours, less than 24 hours, because just the way things are with the way that the schedule is done, kudos to Adam Silver. They have to turn around. They have to figure out a way to win this game against the Toronto Raptors team that, you know, obviously heads above in their division. But it's a game that they cannot afford to lose.
Yeah, what a weird ending schedule for the Celtics. So they play the Bucks again. So in their last seven games, they played Milwaukee twice, Toronto twice, Cleveland twice, and Detroit. It doesn't exactly seem balanced.
Very unbalanced. Very, very, very unbalanced. Would have loved to probably have seen that Cleveland game a little bit, you know, sooner this season rather than toward the end. The only thing that I can probably say that might happen, and it was something that I probably mentioned, on a previous show, is the fact that if the Celtics take care of their business, some of these games are games where I'm not expecting the coaches, you know, to throw out their best players, on the last few games of the season, if they've pretty much already secured or locked up their position. And those teams I'm talking about are the Toronto Raptors and the Cleveland Cavaliers. So if you have to play them twice, you know, the very worst, you probably split against those guys. But, you know, of the three teams that we were just talking about between Milwaukee, Toronto, and Cleveland, the teams that were beatable, the Milwaukee Bucks would be the teams that you should be able to get two out of two of them, you know, because just in my opinion, and I agree, Milwaukee does have better players. But at the same time, they have not looked like the best team. So now they really have to rely on the fact that they got to come figure out to pull out a win tomorrow against Toronto at Toronto. They definitely got to win at Detroit. And probably more than anything else, the fact that out of these remaining six games, that four of them are going to wind up being games on the road, that's going to be a tough pill for the Boston Celtics to try and, you know, try and swallow if they don't pull out victories.
Yeah, but Toronto has been a bad team for, what, 2-3 months now at this point? I mean, do I think that they're? I honestly have no faith in them as a playoff team. I really don't have faith in any Eastern Conference team outside of the Big Two at this point. But Toronto, you know, their starters have really been in a rut. It's really been their bench that has sort of kept them afloat. But I think that they're a pretty beatable team at this point.
They can listen. They have shown their vulnerability. But then again, we've seen games where, like, just the other night, you know, DeMar DeRozan will come out and drop 46 points and help the Raptors win a basketball game that looked like that they had no business winning to begin with. So, you know, and I'm not taking anything away from the fact that the Boston Celtics are not capable of beating the Toronto Raptors. I'm just saying that Toronto Raptors at times at home can actually look like world beaters. And this just happens to be one of those games where it's not really like the Toronto Raptors have anything to lose if they don't put forth their best effort. It's all on the Celtics for them to figure out a way to win this game, because the Celtics need this game obviously a lot more than the Toronto Raptors do.
Oh, I agree. I definitely don't think, you know, they're anywhere near having their work be done. I just think it's not insurmountable for them, especially being just a game behind the Heat and, you know, two games behind the Nets at this point. I'm looking at their schedule as we speak. So Brooklyn has a home-and-home with Atlanta left. They have to play Portland. Washington is, you know, obviously a playoff team, but the way they've been playing, that game could go either way. They have to play at Milwaukee, Chicago, and Orlando. So their only gimme is basically the season finale at home against Orlando. And that's kind of a tough stretch for them, particularly in the East.
Oh, no, definitely. I had basically said that if the Boston Celtics take care of their business, they should be the eighth seed at the very least, you know, possibly a seventh, because, you know, with the way that the Miami Heat have been playing and the looking at the rest of the schedules for all of the other teams, I just felt like the Boston Celtics, to me, had the best opportunity or the best chance, you know, really to control their own destiny to win basketball games. I think that they're capable of winning. Now, I'm not, you know, going out on a limb and saying they're going to beat every single team. I knew that they were going to probably lose a couple games here, maybe one or two to Toronto, to Cleveland. But, you know, they should be able to win one of those games against Toronto. They should be able to win possibly one of those games against Cleveland if David Blatt chooses not to throw out LeBron James for the full 48 and Kyrie Irving and company. I mean, up and down, you look at the rest of those guys, Kevin Love is still not healthy. They can possibly win that basketball game at home. They can pull one out. The Cleveland Cavaliers have been known to snooze in some particular basketball games. But then the games like against Milwaukee, games like Detroit, they should win those basketball games to keep themselves, if they weren't in relative distance, to at least continue to keep themselves at that eighth position. You know, to me, again, it's like we were saying before, they're not out of it. But it certainly didn't help their cause by losing this game tonight, a home game, you know, against, again, I just think is a decent Milwaukee Bucks team, but certainly not a team that the Boston Celtics should have to fear or walked in with any sense of intrepidation that they couldn't beat this team, you know, on any given night.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't play very well tonight. And looking now at the Heat schedule, they have Detroit, Indiana, Charlotte. They play Orlando and Philadelphia, Toronto and Chicago. So I feel like with that schedule, it's going to be difficult for the Celtics, and being a game out, it's going to be difficult for the Celtics to, you know, overcome that. You have to figure, you know, Miami goes 4-2 in that scenario. At least 4-2. The Celtics would have to go, or they have 7 games left, actually. So, you know, 4-3 is probably unlikely. 5-2 seems more reasonable to me. So if they went 5-2, the Celtics would have to go 5-1 to tie them. I don't know who has the tiebreaker in that scenario, you know, or they would have to hope Brooklyn plays well. So it doesn't look great to me, just offhand, but it certainly can be done.
No, definitely. And you know, and I guess the unevenness of this schedule, so to speak, is really going to have us kind of biting our nails a little bit because of the fact that the Celtics are a game ahead of a few of these teams that are already in position with that 7-8 seed with some with a game or two remaining. So there's going to be like a period where you're just like, wow, you know, you're just crossing your fingers hoping that whoever it is that the Heat play, whoever it is the Nets play, demolishes them. Because if the Celtics do take care of their business at this particular juncture, they're still going to need a little bit of help. Every single time that the Boston Celtics lose a basketball game, they are going to have to depend on another team to help them out if they have any chance for them to be able to lock up any one of those two remaining seeds that is still open in the Eastern Conference. And so, you know, it's just critical now at this point that they just win games. That's what it's going to come down to. They have to win these games, and it doesn't matter who it is that they're playing against, whether it be a Toronto or be a Cleveland. They have to go on with the mindset that every single game they're playing for right now is a playoff game.
Can Cal, let me ask you, are you one of the people who's of the mindset, like, why would the Celtics try to get in the playoffs? Why would they win right now, you know, when they would have the opportunity to get in the lottery? Are you an all-or-nothing guy where, you know, if your team has no chance to win the title, should your team just not try to win at all? Or do you think it's a good thing that they're fighting, you know, whether or not they actually end up getting in? Just the fact that they've shown this sort of heart, you know, late in the season, is it a good thing?
I'm of the mindset that I believe that this team, you know, we're talking about this Boston Celtics team or just in general?
Just in general.
Just in general. In general, I'm of the mindset that I don't really buy into the all or nothing because in this day and age, with the way the lottery picks are set up and with the way that the prospects are set up, you know, unless it's a lock, unless I hear Jay Billis praising a player to the heavens, I'm not completely sold on whether or not this guy is going to be, you know, the franchise player that everyone makes him out to be, because those come once in a generation. So I really think that it comes down to you got to learn how to work with the players that you have. Whoever it is that you locked in these contracts, these ridiculous contracts, these guaranteed contracts with, you better squeeze out whatever it is that you expected these guys to be. And so at this particular juncture, once I saw the competitive nature of this Boston Celtics team, for example, that these guys are going to be in basketball games. And given the fact that the Eastern Conference is what it is, and we don't know if this Eastern Conference is going to be like this again for another, you know, for next 2-3 years. But if you're the Boston Celtics and you are somewhere in that playoff picture, what sense does it make now to tank basketball games just to get a lottery pick, just so that you can, quote unquote, hit the reset button? What are you resetting to? You know, if you got a couple of guys that actually go out there and they play this game, they have a high basketball IQ, they display the fundamentals, they're competitive even to the best talented teams, then I think it's just a question of learning how to win games. And the best way for you to be able to do that is make it important. So these games are important. And so I like the idea that this is a Celtics team that is trying to play themselves into an opportunity to get into the playoffs, because we don't know what's going to happen, you know, in the next couple of years. This Eastern Conference may actually get better. We don't know. You know, some of the great players from the Western Conference can shift over to the Eastern Conference. But what will the Celtics be with that if they don't get any of those players? They're going to just still have draft picks, lottery draft picks to look at. So, you know, it was maybe been 10 years ago, I would have been fine about that idea, that notion, that mindset. But there just comes a point where this has to be on the organization to coach these guys up to play at a level where we don't have to be completely dependent upon the idea that we have to throw money out at free agent guys that are talking about wanting to come over here, that want to be in the spotlight or anything like that. You know, we got guys that know how to play this game, start playing this game. And right now we're starting to see that. And I can live with the disappointment of games. They go out there, they lose a couple of tough games. And you know what? You should criticize them. You should berate them because they can play better basketball. It's not, you know, I'm not saying it's easier said than done, but I'm just saying that right now at this particular juncture, I like the idea that this is a basketball team where no one expected them to even have even 30 wins on their plate, 30, 34, 35 wins on their plate. And they're actually going out there and they may even be exceeding those expectations. And if you really look at this roster, this team can actually be a good team next year. You add a couple of pieces here and there. You get under the system that Brad Stevens is getting these guys to buy into. This can be a better basketball team. And so I want to be realistic in seeing these guys push that to 40, 45 wins. You know, but you can't do that if the idea is that we're just going to accept the fact that they're just going to kind of frolic around and hover around being one of those bad teams just because we want to see them get a lottery pick. I'm just not sold on the talent that's coming out of college, you know, full-fledged inside of the lottery or outside of the lottery, to have to worry another 3 years about what the Celtics team is going to look like.
Well, and on top of that, Cal, you know, statistically, the odds of getting a value pick at, you know, 11 or so, which is where they would end up should they miss the playoffs and fall into the lottery, as opposed to the 16th pick, which is what they would get as the 8th seed in the East, like, you you know, that player's a crapshoot either way. Like, your percentage chance of getting a better player at 11 over 16 is, it's negligible. So, like, you're in a crapshoot either way. So in that situation, you might as well take that 16th pick, get that playoff experience, you know, have your guys playing together, show free agents, because Boston's going to have money under the cap, and hey, this is a team on the rise. Like, you could take this 8 seed to, you know, one of the top seeds in the East, which is wide open. Then you make that pitch based on what happens there. I feel like good things happen to teams that try to win. Like, it reflects well on the franchise. It reflects well on the fans. And I'm tired of the mentality, the all or nothing mentality, because it's unethical to sports to say that, like, the team that got in the NBA Finals and lost is no better off than the team that missed the playoffs, and is no better off than the Sixers and the Knicks. Like, that's not true. Like, we should hold value in accomplishments, even if those accomplishments aren't an NBA title. And I feel like this mindset where, like, you should build everything towards just winning a title, and, you know, you can sacrifice the value of your team for eternity if that builds you towards that title. I feel like it's almost breaking the nature of sports, because the nature of sports is to compete. And we should look upon the Celtics as a playoff team, as this team has had a more successful year than if they, you know, don't make the playoffs and they get a lottery pick, even if that lottery pick is slightly more likely to make them good.
Yeah, we've seen so many interesting scenarios that have taken place. And my mindset has always been, I believe in building a team and not building around a player, or building a team around a player, so to speak. So, you know, a lot of franchises have tried to sell themselves on the idea that we're going to build around a LeBron James. We're going to build around a Carmelo Anthony. You know what? That's great, because those are generational players. And if that's the strategy that the organization wants to take, and they can afford to do that, have no problems with that. That's them. But that's never really been the Boston Celtics. The Boston Celtics have always been about building a team. Even when you have generational players like the Kevin McHales, the Larry Birds, the Bob Cousy, a lot of those guys created their stardom, created their birthright as being greats in the NBA because of what they did with the team. And just to me, I feel like if you're going to have that kind of mentality, that mindset, you can't go against that just because the trend of the NBA is, well, I want to do it this particular way because everyone else is doing it. If the Boston Celtics are truly about winning and are truly about what Boston Celtics fans have been used to, stay true to who you are. And so I'm seeing that from quite a number of players. Like, to me, the maturation process to me is so critical, because there are just going to be some players, I'm not expecting them to post up numbers that we see from James Harden, that we see from Kevin Durant. But I would like to see three or four guys post up numbers that would equal out to what a guy like James Harden could possibly do. Because that to me tells me that all three of those guys have a lot of upside that can contribute to the team's success. Those numbers outweigh a lot more than just whether or not one player is going to be able to totally change the face of a franchise, or totally change, you know, the idea. Maybe that's good for some small market basketball teams that never had that. But for the Boston Celtics, to me, it's always been about that team element. And sometimes we get too caught up into that notion that one team is doing it one way, that means we have to start doing it that way. That shouldn't have been the Boston Celtics. And I'm just glad that Danny Ainge has kind of recognized that we sit here, we chastise Danny Ainge because of the fact that some of the trades that he did make were questionable trades. Listen, if these guys are actually producing for this Celtics team to be in the position that they're in, I'm applauding Danny Ainge. We knocked the guy because he didn't hit a home run on what we were expecting. But if these guys are producing in ways that we thought should still get us to that end result, who are we to question, you know, his proudness as being a general manager, as being a part of aspirations? He clearly understands what Brad Stevens needed in order to get this team to play better basketball. Because that's what we as Celtics fans wanted to see, was the Celtics play better basketball, especially after what we saw from last season. So to me, I'm just really happy to see that these guys are competing. And everything that they're competing for now means something. You know, we can't say that about the New York Knicks. We can't say that about the Philadelphia 76ers. And those are two teams in our division. So the fact that the Boston Celtics are not one of those teams that we're now talking about that in that same breath, to me, makes me sleep better at night, because it means that in the next year or two, this can be a better basketball team, because there's nothing here that's not telling me that these guys can't get better playing in this system and that they can't compete and be better in this Eastern Conference. So that to me is the biggest key more than anything on why I just believe in that idea that we shouldn't be throwing our chips into the idea that we're waiting for lottery picks or waiting for what's going to come out of the draft. Because if you didn't know how to get these guys to play better basketball when you got them in the draft, then what good is it to keep them on your basketball team than to send them off to somebody else so they can go and perform better for someone else?
Yeah, you seem to want to credit Ainge for that. I'd push back a little on that just because you're right. He traded Rajon Rondo and Jeff Green, who were the team's two best players at the start of the season. And I wouldn't have had a problem with that. I still don't really have a problem with the trades he made. But the fact of the matter is, I don't think he made them with the idea of improving the team this season, because the guys he traded for Rondo, you know, specifically Brandon Wright and Jameer Nelson, Nelson was released and Brandon Wright was immediately traded at didn't get any minutes, and then it was immediately traded at the first opportunity. Jeff Green wasn't traded for any talent in return. I think that, you know, Ainge's idea was to tank, and the fact of the matter is that Brad Stevens at this point is too good of a coach to allow this team to go in that direction.
All right, well, wait, Calvin, just so we make sure that I'm clarifying what my point was. My point wasn't that he was trading for talent. There's a difference between talent and bringing players that are going to be able to contribute to what Brad Stevens wants. I'm sure that there were other players that Danny Ainge could have pulled that could have helped them in the tanking process, okay? And for money purposes, I'm sure that there could have been anyone on any of those rosters that he could have pulled. But the guys that he wound up bringing back did produce in some way. They did something for those teams. It's just that for the Dallas Mavericks and the player that they wanted, they just had no use for a guy like Jay Crowder. But Jay Crowder produced for the Dallas Mavericks. There was a reason why he was still on that basketball team. I'm just saying that Danny Ainge went and got guys that came in and was able to contribute and do what Brad Stevens needed these guys to do, especially with the fact that the Celtics were losing players. Remember, there were injuries across the board for the Celtics team. They have no depth. And certainly they weren't relying on anyone that they were getting from their D-League system to come in and help contribute in the same way if you were going to trade off your best players to get some kind of players back. So what I'm just saying is they got back players that they could plug in right away, that Brad Stevens could use, that can go in there and to help them perform. And the result is they came out and they won basketball games. I'm not saying that these guys are far and beyond going to be talented players, you know, for the next 10, 15 years. Yeah. What I'm saying is that they can definitely help this basketball team win games that a lot of people didn't even expect them to win, even with the idea of them tanking. They came in and they helped them do that.
Yeah, but I feel like your memory is selective on this, because let's look at the Jeff Green trade, for example. All right, the Jeff Green trade was for a Tayshaun Prince who was considered completely washed up, wasn't getting minutes anymore in Memphis. You know, he came to Boston and immediately played well, all of a sudden started hitting threes, something Tayshaun hasn't done in forever. And then so what did Danny Ainge do? He promptly traded away Tayshaun to bring in Jonas Jerebko, a guy who wasn't doing anything in Detroit, and all of a sudden Jerebko's playing well in the system. Do I think that Danny Ainge, you know, liked Tayshaun Prince more than he liked Jeff Green? I find that hard to believe. And do I think that he then liked Jonas Jerebko more than he liked Tayshaun? Well, maybe, but Jerebko wasn't considered to be a guy who was going to contribute to this team. All of these things have happened because of
Wait a second, Calvin. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that Tayshaun Prince was going to re-sign with the Boston Celtics, or do you think that Tayshaun Prince was going to do anything more than what he was giving the Boston Celtics now if Danny Ainge had an opportunity to get a younger and more of an upside type player in Jonas Jerebko to help out that bench?
No. One, I don't think Jerebko is an upside-type player, number one, although he's played spectacularly well in Boston. But coming into the trade, I did not think Jonas Jerebko was an upside player. Actually, I still don't. I kind of think he is what he is. And number two, I also don't think he'll be back next year anyway. I mean, Marcus Thornton was playing well, and they got rid of him. Jameer Nelson, when they didn't have a guy playing point guard, Phil Pressey was basically the guy playing point guard. They didn't have Isaiah yet. Evan Turner was out. you know, Marcus Thornton was sort of playing that role a little bit, but he was shooting well. They got rid of him for nothing. So I don't think that Ainge was trying to win this year. I think he was doing everything he could to put this team back in the lottery. But again, the coaching is just too good, combined with the fact that, you know, some of the younger players progressed a little bit more quickly than you might have expected, or really just outperformed expectation. Nobody expected Jeremko to play this well. He hasn't shown anything like, not that he's, you know, spectacular at this point. Luigi Datome can't even get minutes in an NBA game, and Brad Stevens has managed to find ways to, you know, fit him in here and there. But he was playing for Detroit, and he couldn't get into a game. So I don't, yeah, do I think that Ainge just really liked Jeremko? I find that hard to believe. Do I think that he likes Jeremko more than he liked Jeff Green? I doubt it. I mean, because that's what that trade resulted in. Do I think Brandon Wright, who was considered the best player in that trade, was traded within 2 weeks to Phoenix for a pick? So if he was trying to make the team better this year, why would he trade a guy who's, you know, relatively young, considered to be underrated, was a huge force on Dallas's bench for a draft pick? It's because Danny Ainge wasn't trying to be good this year, but Brad Stevens was, you know, good this year despite what he wanted. So you got to roll with it at some point. But I'd say it's going a little too far to say that Ainge, you know, crafted this team, because I don't think he intended to do that at all.
Okay. Like I said, I think you're missing the point of what I said. I didn't say anything about crafting the team. What I'm saying is getting players that were going to come in and be able to do what Brad Stevens is asking of them to do. And even if the idea was that he didn't want to keep Brandon Wright, the fact of the matter is Brandon Wright still would have contributed under Brad Stevens in this particular system. What I'm just saying is that it's one thing when you're trading players just to get players because it's all about the financials, but there's also another thing when you get players to come in that is going to maintain whatever the culture is in that locker room, whatever it is that is just allowing this team, the younger guys, to still play good basketball. You bring guys in that, you know, are just going to be a problem, that are not going to help the team, that's not going to allow these guys to grow, that's going to be a problem, and it's going to manifest itself in the way that the Celtics are trying to move forward. I mean, we've seen this time and time again when you got guys like Jared Sullinger. Who are you going to get to reach out to Jared Sullinger to be a better basketball player because you've basically invested in him being in the future of the franchise? When you go and you trade away all of your best players, understanding that you know that this quote-unquote is going to be a rebuilding season, the one thing that I've seen most GMs do is they trade away and they bring back players that offer nothing. Don't even help towards this team even improving something that you can have any kind of better outlook. And maybe that's the reason why we use, quote unquote, the tanking word. But who is that on? I'm just saying that Danny Ainge went and got some guys out there that just came in and just played for Brad Stevens. And that result is that they win basketball games that maybe not a lot of people expected to win. I'm not giving them a ticker tape parade for it. I'm just saying I at least applaud Danny Ainge for just not going out and just pulling out guys that you could have basically plucked from the D League to just come play for the Boston Celtics simply because the idea was that you were trying to tank. And now we're actually in a position to win playoff games. I'd like to at least give them a little bit of credit for that, because we've seen GMs who've lost jobs not doing that, just because it's all about the financials, or it's all about the idea that this rebuilding process that goes nowhere for the next 3 years. That's just my opinion to it. But under no circumstances am I laying out this idea that Danny Ainge did this marvelous job in putting this team together. I didn't say that.
No.
I'm just saying at least he put some guys in there that can play.
No, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that he did a bad job or that he's doing a bad job. I just think that he's trying to look at the bigger picture, and he was trying not to win this year with, you know, much like he hears some of the GMs that weren't trying to be competitive this year, and there's a logic to that. So this is not me even being critical of Ainge. In fact, it's really me being complimentary to Stevens, because I don't think Ainge's intent at all was for this team to be this good. I do think that he basically, you know, brought in a bunch of spare parts off the street, guys who didn't look like they could play, couldn't play on other teams, couldn't play on other bad teams in some situations, and, you know, somehow he's managed to have them all play. Jay Crowder averaged 2 points with Dallas, two. So it's not like Jay Crowder was just this prospect. Wright was the only guy considered a prospect in that deal. You know, the rest of the guys were just salary fillers. So it's great that it's worked out. Jonas Jerebko, you know, he's like a guy who plays 9 minutes a game on Detroit's bench. They tell me he can't get in games. So I get what you're saying. I'm not being critical. I'm just saying Brad Stevens is a miracle worker. He's been given, in my opinion, piles of garbage, and he's turned them into gold. I mean, credit to him for that. Jared Sullinger was their best player throughout most of the season, and he's been out, and they've been better without him. Nobody could have expected that. Tyler Zeller, turned into, in my opinion, he's had an awesome year. I've been really impressed with him, but I can't remember him having an NBA moment before that moment. So, to me, I credit Stevens. But I want to ask you about Sullinger, because you didn't mention him about how, you know, he's the franchise in your mind going forward. He is going to be a restricted free agent after this season. If you're Danny Ainge, if you're the Celtics, do you consider making him a big offer now, you know, before the October 31st deadline, or do you think it's better to just let the season play out and, you know, see what kind of shape he comes in at and then try to make him an offer after the season?
I hate to say this, but I think they need to let this thing play out. You know, my biggest concern with Jared Sullinger is, is he even going to be able to, is he still even going to be in the NBA in the next 5 years? And what you're basically talking about is now, extending him because of the fact that he is a restricted free agent. So, you know, if to me, this is more on Jared and his willingness to want to, you know, stay healthy. And to be able to do that, he has got to show something. And I don't care if it's to us, the Celtics, or to whoever it is that he may be doing this for. But the one thing I would hate to see is the Boston Celtics throw out a ton of money to Jared Sullinger because they feel the pressures, quote unquote, of what happens with restricted free agents, like what happened with Indiana and Lance Stephenson, or with Utah and Gordon Hayward. You know, this to me is not going to be that same type of scenario because we at least have been able to see what those guys are capable of doing, and you're just rolling the dice. But right now with Jared Sullinger, he's just been so up and down that I think that he's afforded the Celtics the opportunity to not feel like they have to figure out a way to throw money at him early to prevent him from signing on. And if the Celtics do that, if Jared Sullinger doesn't take that money, he is going to be such a fool, because if he then it's now going to be on him to perform to such a level to even force the other teams to want to throw that kind of money at him to make the Celtics decide on whether or not they want to keep him. But if I'm the Celtics and you're asking me from a Celtics perspective, I would just say wait this out, because right now we really don't know what the status is of Jared Sullinger. He can be great at times, and then there are times even when he's healthy, he can just disappear. Is that worth max money? Throwing out a bunch of money for that? I don't know.
Well, max money, in my opinion, that's just insane. I certainly wouldn't offer him max money, but I think that there's...
But Calvin, we have seen teams, though, who have purposely thrown out max money, like the Dallas Mavericks, to take a player away from their, quote-unquote, their core, like they did with Chandler Parsons from the Houston Rockets. And the Houston Rockets are just like, okay, well, we've seen the hateness of GMs, you know, do things really just out of the sake of saying, we just don't want that player playing on that basketball team, so we'll throw that money out. If they've got the money to do that, they've got the space, the cap space in order to work with in order to do that, I'm sure that they would. It wouldn't be a far-fetched idea to me that it would something like that were to happen, regardless of who the player is, if they're capable of doing it.
Well, no, there's no question that, you know, in the market and the way it works, you know, nearly any player of value is going to be overpaid. I just think if we're talking max, and I'm letting him walk. I don't think I highly doubt that a team's offering him a max, even, you know, with the max set to increase next season. I feel like we're talking, you know, 15 max, and even then, I'd question that decision if I was a team paying Jared Sullinger $15 million a season, but.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It'll be interesting to see what that number actually comes in at. But if you're the Celtics, I think you might want to consider, you know, offering him a 4-year extension at a rate that seems a little bit better to you than what you might get if he has a monster year next year, especially, you know, if he is coming off these injury concerns now, maybe he'd be interested in taking a, you know, a little bit of a discount. Maybe he'd take, you know, 4 years, $48 million because of the fact that he's been so injury prone and, you know, you're securing him that money, as opposed to if he plays out the year and he has a successful year next year, then all of a sudden you have to pay him, you know, 4 years, $64 million or something. Then that's a huge difference.
No, I completely agree with you from, you know, from that perspective. You know, and it'll be interesting to see what, you know, what takes place in here. Here again, you know, hence part of maybe the reason why Jared Sullinger, he understands, you know, the levity of the circumstances of how he's been with this Celtics team since he's been drafted and what, you know, he is expecting to see from not just this team, but any team that's going to possibly be looking at him as he, you know, once he becomes a restricted, you know, free agent. You know, again, my concern is that if the Celtics are going to throw money, I hope they throw it, you know, at the right people for the right reasons. You know, we've seen them, you know, throw money at players that, you know, I'm sure, you know, you could be half and half about it. I rarely have seen, you know, a scenario right now where I've bought into completely every time that we have extended a contract or, you know, have decided to keep a player on a little bit longer. And the guys I'm talking about are Avery Bradley and Jeff Green. And I just kind of wonder sometimes, like, I get it. You know, some people may not agree with me. I just didn't like those contract extensions. I have nothing wrong with those guys. I just felt like I didn't know what the direction of this team was going to be, where either of these guys were going to fit in it. And if they were a viable option elsewhere, to be able to get something back for them or to send them, I wouldn't have had a problem with that. And if they were going to sign with somebody else, I wouldn't have had a problem with that either. Because if the Celtics were not getting anything from these guys on a consistent basis, then I just, you know, I wasn't going to not get any sleep over it. So I just hope that the Celtics, whatever they decide to do, is not something in haste. I hope they don't feel like they're going to be pressured by it, just because we expect Jared Sullinger to be their second best player. But again, I got to see more from Jared before I buy into the idea that the Celtics really should have to step up and throw anything on the table for him just yet.
Fair enough. I feel like that, you know, both of them are positions that have merit, and that's why the question is so fascinating to me.
Most definitely. So we're running on the clock, Calvin. So really quick, man, Celtics tomorrow at Toronto. What do you think are the keys for the Celtics to come out and win this basketball game? You know, from what you can accumulate, what you've seen from the Toronto Raptors. You mentioned earlier before, it's not been a good Raptors team, especially the second half of the season. You know, they've been really inconsistent, not just offensively. They have not really been good defensively like they were last season when they got themselves into the playoffs. But what do you think is going to be the key for the Boston Celtics to pull out this victory tomorrow against the Toronto Raptors?
Honestly, Kyle Lowry looks exhausted to me. He looks like, as well as he played earlier in the season, he really looks like he's worn down and he's playing out the string. If I'm the Celtics, I would take their quick guards. I'd take their Bulldogs. I'd take Marcus Smart, who, you know, I'm going to have to talk about that guy at some point. I mean, he's 1 second to me at all times from going off the rails. So I would have him all over Kyle Lowry, just hounding him, trying to wear him down, you know, frustrating him. And then just attack them with their quick guards, with their dribble penetration. That's where they thrive. They have a lot of small lineups. Zeller works well in that quick pick and roll. He runs the floor surprisingly well for a big guy. I would just push it up the floor at every opportunity against him. And hopefully that's enough to win.
Toronto Raptors are 43-30, and so, you know, this is going to be a must-win situation for the Celtics to maintain themselves to be in this Eastern Conference playoff picture. It's going to be an exciting time, Celtics fans. We definitely want to hear from you. So tomorrow night, you know, we're going to have our post-game show after the Celtics play the Toronto Raptors, probably around the same time frame as we have done tonight. Calvin, I know you're going to be watching this game. Are you predicting the Celtics victory, my friend?
Sure, why not? I'll predict the Celtics victory.
It sounded like something that you just threw into the book. It's like, oh, you know what? Since I'm already on the push, let me just go ahead and take the money line on the Boston Celtics tonight.
Yeah, it's not gonna cost me anything. I mean, is my reputation going to be ruined if they lose?
Probably not. You're still the great analyst as always, and I don't think that a prediction in a Celtics victory, whether they win or lose, will tarnish that, my friend.
Okay, well then, since my reputation is secure, I'll just I'm riding with the Celtics victory. I want to see him in the playoffs. We got to do a playoff game, don't we?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's only right. I mean, they've put us through this much drama and this much trouble.
Yeah.
So I think it's only right that the Celtics figure out a way to win these games and give us some playoff games to talk about. Give us a little extra post game activity, my friend. Give us a little extra post game activity.
Definitely. Maybe the phone line, like last year, the phone lines were blowing up still, but it's been the desert this year. So hopefully, if and when they make the playoffs, I expect the callers to come back.
Oh, goodness gracious. We might have to rechange the name. Like, instead of calling it the Boston Celtics, probably call it the Boston Green Wave or something. Probably startle people. Then they'll just call to cuss us out. But you know what? They're calling nonetheless. So, but this has been a great show. Awesome stuff. Once again, the Boston Celtics lose a tough one to the Milwaukee Bucks, 110-101. Like to thank our man Jared Weiss for jumping on, giving us the ins and outs behind the in the locker room over at the TD Garden. My man Calvin, once again, great analysis and a great debate. You know, we definitely covered a lot of stuff, not just with the Celtics now, but possibly questions that are going to be raised that we would like to see answered as we move forward. And so this Boston Celtics team, as they continue to fight to put themselves in a position to be in this playoffs, right now they're sitting in 9 with a few games left to go. Every single game is critical, and it starts tomorrow night against the Toronto Raptors at Toronto. And the game time is going to be at 7:30 p.m., so that means that we will be jumping on board online around 10 o'clock Eastern time. So be sure to tune in, Celtics fans, Celtics post-game fans more importantly, and be sure to call in when that time comes. We want you on board, 347-215-7771. Expect the social media tweets. We're going to be all over it. This is going to be a must-win game with a playoff atmosphere, so we need to bring our best playoff atmosphere and not only analyzing the game, but also covering the game as well. So for the Celtics post-game show, Calvin Chamberlain and myself, we appreciate you guys listening in, and we'll catch up with you guys tomorrow night when the Celtics take on the Toronto Raptors. See you guys then.
Good night, everyone.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSradio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.